2 years ago, the United States received an influx of visitors from the north, the largest migration of snowy owls in decades. The Arctic birds usually only make it down to southern Canada, but in 2014, they got as far south as Florida. As NPR's Adam Cole reported then, scientists used the rare opportunity to tag the birds and follow their movements. We're going to listen back to that story, and then we'll bring Adam back into the studio for an update.
It's a chilly winter evening on the coast of Maryland, but naturalist Scott Weidensahl and two volunteers are taking a walk on the beach. One of the volunteers cradles a pigeon.
We look like lunatics that have escaped the asylum here. He's taking his pet pigeon for a walk. I'm walking around with a giant mousetrap over my arm.
That giant mousetrap actually looks more like a hockey goal, a light frame that supports a loose netting. It's designed to harmlessly capture large birds of prey, and the pigeon is the bait. It will sit at the center of the trap wearing a sturdy leather jacket to protect it from piercing talons. A few hundred yards away, there's a bright patch of white perched on the crest of a dune, a large female snowy owl. Weidensahl hopes she's hungry.
And that's kind of a typical, I'm getting ready to hunt perch.
He sets up the trap as stealthily as he can, and then he waits for the owl to strike. Like most birders, Weidensahl was surprised when snowy owls suddenly started showing up in the United States, mostly in the north and the east, around Thanksgiving.
There was no preliminary. There were snowy owls everywhere. And actually, I got a call from Dave.
That's Dave Brinker, a biologist with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources.
Who said, this is obviously more than just the typical every 3 to 5 year eruption.
That's eruption with an I. It means a sudden increase in the abundance of a species. This snowy owl eruption wasn't caused by climate change. It was caused by lemmings. Owls eat lemmings, and Dave Brinker says when there are more lemmings, the owls have more babies.
When they get a big lemming high, they can lay up to 14 eggs, and that's what happened.
Huge numbers of owlets hatched, and come winter, they spread far to the south.
And that's when Scott and I got on the phone and said, we need to take advantage of this opportunity, because we won't see something like this for a long time, probably in the rest of our lifetime.
So Brinker and Weidensahl launched Project Snowstorm. Their goal? To tag as many owls as possible with GPS transmitters. By studying the owls' movements, for example, the fact that they hang out at airports, the scientists hope to better understand their behavior and protect them from hazards. In less than 2 weeks, Project Snowstorm managed to cobble together a national team of volunteers and $20,000 in donations. Which brings us back to that Maryland beach, where Weidensahl has been waiting for more than an hour.
Here she comes, here she comes, here she comes.
The big female owl launches herself at the trap, hovers above it for just a moment, and then flies back to her perch. After another half hour, she flies inland and out of sight.
After all that. And the next time somebody quotes Dave Brinker to me that anything worth doing is never easy, I'm going to hit him.
But further down the beach, another birder, Steve Huey, does manage to catch an owl.
It's very large. It's a female, pretty good size.
Like many members of Project Snowstorm, Huey isn't a professional ornithologist.
I'm an analyst for Marriott International.
But he is specially trained and permitted to catch owls. Huey and Brinker measure the big female's wingspan, tail length, fat stores, and then they take a blood sample. The owl is surprisingly calm, but every so often she voices her disapproval.
She says, oh, you've got cold fingers.
And sometimes she shows her disapproval with her beak.
Ow, 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 ow.
Man, I hurt.
Then comes the GPS transmitter. It's a small light box that fits easily in the palm of your hand, and it's equipped with a solar panel and a chip that can hold 5 years' worth of data. The owl wears it like a backpack with two thin Teflon straps wrapping around her wings. Brinker carefully sews the straps by hand so they fit the owl's frame and don't interfere with flight.
At first, they're going to notice it, but they get used to it pretty quick.
As soon as the transmitter is snug, the owl is released on the beach where she was caught.
Are there any solemn words spoken on a time like this?
This is a high-tech owl, so we'll use Star Trek. Live long and prosper.
The owl takes off, gliding out into the dunes. Already her GPS unit is collecting data, longitude, latitude, and altitude, every half hour. And every 3 days, her transmitter and the transmitters of the other 15 owls tagged so far will connect to a cell phone network and send all their data back to Project Snowstorm.
We're all sitting there, 7 o'clock every third day. It's like, you know, come on, who's checking in? And look where that bird went.
You can follow all the tagged owls on the Project Snowstorm website.
Well, Project Snowstorm is currently following 14 owls, and we want to get an update on one of them now from Adam Cole, who reported that story for NPR Science. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Meghna.
So I'm excited to hear this update that you have to this story. I mean, I understand that you wanted to follow the path that one of the birds took when it migrated back north. So which bird did you choose?
Well, I chose to follow a young male, bright white, very handsome owl. His name was Baltimore because he was actually captured at a airport outside of Baltimore. And he's about three now. He was born in this eruption that piece was talking about.
So given that he was captured outside of an airport, I presume that means he was tagged in Maryland?
That's right. They tagged him and they brought him far away from the airport because airports are actually pretty dangerous places for owls. And they released him on a beach on Assateague Island. And then he took about 4, 5, 6 months to make his way up the coast and then up through Canada and finally reach the very top of Quebec.
Oh, so that's a long ways away mm-hmm. for him to travel. I mean, and because he's got this tag or transmitter, he's producing data the entire way up?
That's right. He checks in with his transmitter records his location, his latitude, longitude, altitude every 30 minutes. And then every 3 days, that data comes in to the scientists if he's near a cell tower.
Okay. So I'm just curious, given that we're able to tag at least these owls, I understand, though, that we actually don't know all that much about them and their migratory habits?
That's right. These snowy owls live, they breed, they're born, they spend a lot of their lives up above the Arctic Circle. And that's a place where not a lot of humans are hanging out, so they're not very often observed. And so there's a lot we don't understand about their behavior.
Okay. But you were able to follow Baltimore's path. So how long did his migration take, and what did you find?
Well, his migration took about 6 months. I took about a week to follow that path. and it was pretty fun because we were able to see not only some of the crazy places he stopped, like the top of a skyscraper in New York City, but we were able to use a website called eBird to look and see if anyone had seen him. This is a website where birders can upload their sightings. And so we were able to say, oh, Baltimore was in this place on this day. Did anyone see him? And while he was spent some time in New Jersey, we actually found a photo that someone had taken of him, and this person was a birder named Becky LeBoy.
It was very sunny that day. I came across this white bird body. As it turns out, it was Baltimore, just enjoying the sunshine, and I was enjoying watching him.
I love how she describes her encounter with him. I mean, mm-hmm. in the video that you produced, it seemed like everyone who did encounter Baltimore was really enthralled by the meeting.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing thing to discover one of these bright white birds totally away from any snow, just in your backyard. There was a woman that we met who worked at the smallest radio station in Canada, actually, and she had been a big birder all her life, but she'd recently had a hip injury, so she was sort of confined to her car, which made snowy owls the perfect bird to follow because they're very visible from far away. And she actually saw him on the top of her radio station, and sort of this owl became the radio station's sort of mascot for a time. So here she is.
I spotted the white owl on the very top of CJAI's silo. His mouth was open. You would swear he was laughing at us.
So when we visited that island, we checked the radio station. Baltimore wasn't there. So we went across the street to this school where some kids said they'd seen him.
We went outside and then the snowy owl was just like staring at us.
So that was pretty exciting for them. But he wasn't there either. So we had to drive around this island, which was about the size of Manhattan, but it had a population of 200 people. And we were searching for Baltimore on every perch we could find.
Wow. So not very good odds there. But for people who are listening who haven't yet seen your video, I know they've got just one question by this point in time. And here is a little bit from the video that helps answer that question.
Yeah, that's him. I can see the transmitter. I think that's him. I think that's Baltimore. Right there.
So you do find him.
Yes, at long last, we discovered him. And actually, it's pretty funny because I probably said that same thing about 12 times, and I was always wrong.
Oh,
it could have
no.
been a plastic bag. It could have been a mailbox. Sometimes it was an owl, but it wasn't the right owl. So actually confirming that it was him, seeing his transmitter actually on his back, was a pretty exciting feeling.
Adam, let me ask you, how really did that feel? I mean, you said excited, but I imagine that there was more deeper feeling, because every time I really think, like I look at a map and I think about the journey that these birds make under their own wing power, it astonishes me. And there you were. I mean, you made that same journey and then you found him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is amazing to think about not just the distance that they've traveled, but how many people he had encountered and touched, and how many people had seen him, and how many people hadn't seen him but unknowingly were his host. He stayed on houses throughout the United States and Canada, and those people never knew he was there, but they provided a place for him to rest. So definitely there was a feeling like I had discovered a celebrity. You know, at that point, he was loomed very large in my mind, and I finally got to see him.
Well, that must have been a terrific feeling. NPR science reporter Adam Cole, thank you so much, Adam. It's been great to talk with you.
Thank you.